This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. Coming up, we'll hear details of the new sustainable brewing program being launched by Western Michigan University and Kalamazoo Valley Community College. But first, a recent article in Vanity Fair examined how officials in Dallas reacted when a patient in their city was diagnosed with Ebola. At one point, the article describes the yawning gulf between facts and fears about Ebola. This week, a symposium about the Ebola outbreak is being held at Kalamazoo College. It's called Ebola in Perspective, Our Roles as Global Citizens. Joseph Bangara is a history professor, and he is the director of K College's Africana Studies program. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
He is with us in studio, and we are also joined by Dr. Olaji Jai, who is a research fellow in pathobiological sciences at the School of Veterinary Medicine at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, and a research scientist with the Global Product Safety and Regulatory Affairs Division of Procter & Gamble. He will be giving this keynote address at this week's symposium at K College, and Dr. Jai joins us from Madison by phone. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me on your show.
So let's begin with that question that I think is right in the title there of your symposium. How do we consider our roles as global citizens when it comes to a disease like Ebola and an outbreak in the United States?
Yes, so Ebola is a very, very deadly virus. And of course, it struck West Africa very much so than, the previous outbreaks that have happened in Central and parts of East Africa. And the magnitude of it in West Africa was so high, and the geographic spread was also really, really high. And so it almost overwhelmed the systems in those places that, places like Sierra Leone, Liberia, and in Guinea that have gone through wars before, and that the healthcare system wasn't prepared in a ready situation. And also, there was a lot of, large populations and large centers. And so when Ebola struck in those areas, what it did also show was our global connectedness, because within a period of a couple months, we've seen the virus spreading to Nigeria, via someone moving from Liberia to Nigeria, and then a Liberian coming over to the U.S., and then we've seen the virus strike in places like Spain as far as, Scotland very recently. And that brings to mind the layers of our human connectedness from the human perspective, and then the virus in itself goes from animal to human, so that brings the animal to human connection. And then there is also the virus thrives in forested ecosystems, and so that also brings the aspect of our ecosystems into perspective. So there is a lot of things that come into the picture. And then one of the key drivers of the outbreak in the region was also the social dynamics, some of the social dynamics and some of the cultural dynamics. So when you talk about our roles as global citizens, it has to be understood that it is more than a virus. There are a lot of other dynamics that have to come into play, and where all of us as globally conscious citizens can be of, can play an effect. These are the response. Is economics. It requires a lot of resources. It requires funding more than what some of those regions might have. But also, we have to think about some of the social aspects of those regions too, and how do we as global citizens help in terms of alleviating issues like poverty, issues like the public health systems, issues like education, issues like some of the lack of capacity that needed to address some of this. So when we look at the global perspective around Ebola, you really have to move just from the virus itself and really think about what structures do we have to put in place that make sure that when we have events like this, we are able to better respond to them rather than react to the virus.
What you just mentioned there, though, that idea of how connected we are in this day and age. Travel overseas is much greater now than it was, say, 30, 40 years ago. Does that perhaps bring an element of self-preservation into the argument, as opposed to simply saying, well, yes, they're fellow human beings, and we should be concerned about them, even if they are in another country? Are those two things more in line now than they would have been, say, a few decades ago?
Very much so. They are so much more in line. And remember, you know, right now we are talking of Ebola, and we only know about 1% of the viruses that are out there. 99% of them we don't know. And we are highly connected. The lessons we are learning about Ebola at the moment, that Ebola can travel by road. You know, if you have a good road network, people move, you can have Ebola, like from Freetown, from the border regions where it started in the epicenter, like around Kailahun, around the Guinean borders of Masanta. You know, it quickly moved to the cities in Conakry. And we now know that we are connected. Somebody could be in Freetown today. Next moment, he is either in China or he is flying out of China to the U.S. And so we've seen such things happening. And so how do we connect our global systems? I think it is much more now of a responsibility that we have as global citizens that, you know, things that happen in one region, we are not really insulated or isolated from them, and that our actions also here affect actions out in those parts of the world.
Professor Bangura, looked like you wanted to jump in and say something there.
I think he has covered the key areas. As global citizens, as you said, the first instinctive reaction usually is self-preservation. But what the symposium is doing is that we are saying everyone should appreciate the reaction of self-preservation. But is that enough to contain an epidemic? Is that a solution to stopping an epidemic affecting the preserver? So we are saying that we think there are much more effective and productive ways of tackling the disease as global citizens. And backing on isolationist moves may not do it, you know, as some people were advocating here in the United States. We have realized that when we put all hands on deck, we try to confront the disease as a group, as a global community, then we are much more effective. The United States, as you mentioned in your question, has also done its own part in contributing to its role as a global citizen, in the sense that in Liberia, you know, they sent troops, and guess what? The epidemic is ebbing in Liberia. We want it to be resolved now, but it is better than where it was 8 months ago. And that's as a result of the cooperative attitude of other nations in the world. So the symposium will bring us together to discuss how effective some of these measures are, these countermeasures are toward the disease, how we could also be prepared to face or confront another epidemic that might inevitably ensue, and the lessons learned so far in terms of our reaction to this disease.
The news release for the symposium notes that the outbreak of the Ebola virus in West Africa reveals much about matters human and humane. And the first thing mentioned on that list is fear. Mm-hmm. How much does fear drive the response to something like Ebola? And does it lead to some things which are misguided?
Yeah, fear is a human tendency. It's not only the Americans that are afraid. The very West Africans affected by the disease are fearful, you know, because they see the deadly nature of the disease. So I don't think we should fault people for being afraid. It's all part of the concept of self-preservation. But the hard reality is you have to step back and just think whether, you know, by being afraid, by being overwhelmed with fear, if that's the solution to what you are afraid of, you know. But I think when you engage people in such conversations, then they see the logic of what to do. But I think it's unfair to criticize people for being afraid, because it's just natural. But beyond that, I think educating people about the nature of the disease and how it's contacted and how it's, you know, deadly helps in the sense that it creates a sense of awareness. And the sense of awareness eclipses the issue of fear, which is what should be the goal. You have a right to be afraid, but it is better for you to be educated about what you are afraid of, so that you can be prepared to confront what you are afraid of.
So just to wrap this up here, let me have both of you maybe weigh in on that issue of education. Is that the whole key going forward to having a level-headed, responsible, effective response to an outbreak? Education.
I would say that should be step number one. You know, the more, as I said, the more you are aware of something, the more you know how to approach it. But obviously, that's not nearly enough as the solution. You know, as Dr. Njai was saying, we have to have a series of systems in place. You know, we have to have structure that can handle these epidemics. You know, you have to have a monitoring system. You have to have a very strong health care infrastructure, which many of the African countries lack. So it's a combination of factors that will really, really help confront epidemics of this in the future. And same with HIV. When we had the epidemic of HIV, there were all sorts of conspiracy theories about HIV. And so people became affected in some ways because of their ignorance of the disease. If we had mounted, you know, a campaign on educating people how it's contracted and how it can be avoided, that will help. And so for me, I believe that is really key, studying the disease, studying its effects, and studying measures to defeat it.
Dr. Jai, you want to have the final word here?
Yes, I completely I'll ditto what Dr. Bangura just said. And I think, you know, with the education piece, which is really important with regards to Ebola, also comes with developing a strong, public health education aspect systems in some of these countries in that region in Africa. But even here in the U.S. also, you know, you see that measles, things like Ebola strikes a lot of fear in people, because, you know, even when we think that the healthcare system is very strong in the U.S., you see that cases of Ebola were not handled very well in some of the instances where you had the Liberian dying and some few cases where people got panicked. Because, in essence, things like Ebola, you don't have an Ebola doctor. Somebody is not trained to be an Ebola doctor, but you can get an oncologist. You can get somebody who is trained as a psychiatrist. But for Ebola, you don't get an Ebola doctor, and that's what brings a lot of fear, not just in Africa, but even here. So capacity has to be something that is built on a global scale and then at the local level. But also, when you think of the response in Africa, you know, it will not just be enough to go in right now and build centers, treatment centers, build hospitals, build all these structures, and then leave, you know, because that's usually the case. We go and build stuff, we do stuff, we make them, you put the structure, it is controlled, the cases are down, then everybody leaves. Then what happens? The capacity is not there to continue to maintain those structures, to continue to trigger that into the population. So this has to be a continual investment, a continuous process of engaging healthcare professionals there and healthcare professionals here. And then so there has to be a knowledge flow, knowledge transfer, and a continuous process of engaging those communities at the local level. But also we have to be able to tap into the indigenous knowledge in terms of the responses in some of these countries also, because part of what happened in a lot of communities and there was a lot of pushback is because there wasn't a proper way. The protocols that we normally develop, the biomedical protocols we have, is basically I go into this community and I isolate everybody. I do what I follow protocol-wise. But then you fail into take into consideration the cultural nuances in those communities and what knowledge base do they have about how to handle this type of diseases. So the education we have to think about is how do we develop systems and messaging that actually builds into whatever it is there in that local environment, and thereby we can be able to respond effectively whenever things happen in various communities.
Gentlemen, thank you both for your time. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Joseph Bangura is a professor of history at Kalamazoo College, director of Africana Studies, and the coordinator for this week's symposium. He joined us in studio. And Alhaji Jai joined us by phone from Madison, Wisconsin, where he's a research fellow in pathobiological sciences at the School of Veterinary Medicine at the University of Wisconsin. Dr. Jai will give the keynote address for the symposium on Ebola. It's being held Friday and Saturday at Kalamazoo College. Links with more details can be found at WMUK.org. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. Soon, brewers in Kalamazoo will be able to learn how to create a cold one that is also environmentally friendly. Western Michigan University and Kalamazoo Valley Community College have announced that they are launching a sustainable brewing program that will be offered beginning this fall. Ed Martini is the Associate Dean of Arts and Sciences at Western Michigan University, and Steve Bertman is a professor of chemistry at WMU. Gentlemen, thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Let's begin with the question of why. Why is a sustainable brewing program being launched in the first place?
Really, you know, the genesis of this program is we were looking almost 2 years ago and seeing that there were similar programs already developed and happening mostly on the coasts and California, out on the East Coast as well. And we saw an opportunity here, given where we're situated geographically in between great beer cities, and there were no programs connected to this in the Midwest. And so about a year ago, year and a half, Steve and I started going around and talking to folks in the industry to really determine if a program would be useful. If so, were we the place to do it? And what we kept hearing from them was absolutely. And the way that it came to be was sort of a chance for them to craft their future workforce, an industry that has exploded here in Southwest Michigan, continues to grow. And so folks really, I think, were jumping at the chance to say it's a chance for us to craft our workforce for the next couple of years, doing so with a great community college, with a great research university, and to do so in a way that would address the needs of the industry for really a next generation.
So you say that you found similar programs on the coast. I mean, these are other universities and community colleges doing similar type things?
Not quite. There are programs in fermentation science. There are certificates in the business of craft brewing. Nobody was doing a program exactly like this that was really built around craft brewing on the one hand for Western's program, but also around the idea of sustainability. And what we learned was that sustainability is really going to be critical to the future of the industry. And given Western's strength in that area, it seemed like a really natural connection.
Why is it critical for the industry going forward?
It's one of the biggest challenges that breweries face going into the future with increasing population, increasing stresses on our natural resources, especially in the Midwest and the Great Lakes region. Maintaining water quality, minimizing energy consumption, these are all challenges for the brewing industry that the people that we talked to felt it would be very advantageous to have people who are trained in the fundamentals of the ethic of sustainability. How do we do things from the beginning in a way that minimizes our environmental footprint and maximizes efficiency?
You mentioned that there's
certainly challenges in terms of water availability and all that sort of thing. But at the same time, is Michigan then a natural place for this sort of thing to develop? Because we do have a lot of water surrounding us.
That's right. And Michigan is already a major player in craft brewing. I mean, we have one of the highest per capita densities of craft breweries in the country. We're way up there with all of the, in the top five polls, but it, some of the other top places for craft breweries are out in the West that are experiencing drought. So I think certainly we are, from the water availability standpoint, Michigan is poised to continue to grow in this area.
So we noted that this is a partnership between Western Michigan University and Kalamazoo Valley Community College. Explain how this works, how these two institutions kind of work together for this one degree.
When we were going out and looking at programs and trying to figure out what kind of a program would work best at Western, we finally got in touch with the folks out at KVCC, Dean McCurdy, who's going to be the dean of the new campus that they're building downtown, and Mike Babb, who he was working with on a similar project. So they were in the early stages of exploring a brewery component as part of their culinary school. And we quickly realized that we could develop a program that would provide all sorts of flexibility for students, lots of different entry points to the program, different pathways to degree completion, that would be consistent with the missions of both schools. The technical expertise and sort of the hands-on experiential component would work really well at KVCC. And then doing the advanced science work and a lot of the sustainability components here, some of the research components would work great at Western. So there's really multiple programs that are built into this. KVCC has a great 30-hour certificate in sustainable brewing that's really built to the industry's gold standard by Mike, who's a master brewer and has worked in the industry for a long time. You can do that and complete an associate's degree at KVCC, and then there's a component where you can complete the associate's that's designed to transfer right into Western, and then you could come in and in another 2 years complete a Bachelor of Science in sustainable craft brewing. So really designed to be very flexible for students. And a student at Western could also start, could already be here, and could enroll in this major and then begin taking the certificate program at KVCC, and the credits will transfer back to Western.
So what are the some of the things that a student's going to learn? Is it largely science-based?
Yeah, this particular degree program that we're launching, what we hope to be an expanded program, is a science degree. In fact, for the first year or two, it's going to be impossible to distinguish someone in the brewing program from someone who's doing a pre-med curriculum. So they're going to be taking all of the fundamental sciences, physics, math, biology, chemistry, and then take advanced coursework in sustainability, and then there are advanced courses that are specific to brewing and other food science related areas like microbiology and fermentation.
What sort of student do you see out there who might have an interest in this? Is it someone who is looking to launch their own microbrewery? Is it someone who might be looking for some other place in the industry?
Yeah, so all of the above, I would say. The craft brewing industry in Michigan and across the country has been growing exponentially. And along with that, there are a number of support industries, such as hops farms, such as malt houses that are growing up. Distributors are starting to really get involved in the craft brewing industry. And so we see some of our students, certainly some of them are going to want to open their own breweries. Some of them are going to want to work for existing breweries. Some of them are going to work in some of these supporting industries. And at the larger breweries, there are multiple types of opportunities, that all of which will benefit from experience in this degree program. So people back in the brew house, people in the front office in human resources, people that are working in the pub and serving the food or planning the menus, all of these job opportunities will benefit from the curriculum we've put together.
Are there models out there for sustainable brewing? Perhaps a craft brewer out there right now, which is doing things in such a way that is recognized as being more sustainable, perhaps, than their competitors?
There certainly are some that are focusing on this explicitly. Of course, Bell's has a full-time sustainability specialist hired to make their whole operation as efficient and sustainable as possible. In smaller breweries, I would say one example is Brewery Vivant up in Grand Rapids. upfront makes that part of, from the very beginning, part of their business model, that they were gonna make great beer, but they were gonna do it as consciously as they can to minimize their footprint and make their operation sustainable.
And this, for a lot of these folks too, it becomes part of their brand too, which is true of a lot of our local beers. It's true of New Belgium out in Colorado, which is a big craft brewery. That sustainability becomes part of their identity, part of their business practice, but it becomes part of their selling point. So especially around here in Kalamazoo, it plays very well along with the farm-to-table, food-to-table types of activities that we have going around town.
And by local.
Exactly.
How much of this program launching is a response to what we've seen in Kalamazoo, which is seemingly a new brewery almost every month for the better part of a year. Is this part of the reason that it was decided that Western and Kalamazoo Valley Community College were the right places to start this?
Some of it for sure is definitely driven by geography. I mean, we felt like we had the expertise to deliver part of this program, and KVCC had the right expertise to deliver their components of the program. But geographically, there's no better place for this program. When we were looking around at existing programs, we didn't find one between the Rockies and the Appalachians. There was nothing going on in the upper Midwest. So when you look at Chicago, northern Indiana, Wisconsin, Michigan, I mean, there's a great need for a program in the Midwest, and where better than Kalamazoo, Grand Rapids area, where, you know, Beer City number one and Beer City number two USA, according to some polls.
Do you see this program as something that may attract students if they're thinking about, you know, Western or going someplace else, or Kalamazoo Valley Community College or going somewhere else, that this program might be something that tips the scales a little bit?
I think there's a misperception on the part of a lot of students that job opportunities from studying science are limited. If you like science, you go to medical school, you go to dental school, and there aren't too many other options. And I think it's a whole lot, from my standpoint, I can say it's a whole lot easier to teach someone chemistry if they have a reason to learn it, and they know what that is, and they have a visceral interest. And so I think people are going to see this, especially people who like science and are interested in science but don't really know what they want to do. I think this will provide them an opportunity or a potential target to shoot for. So I think we're going to see a lot of students interested. I think some people may be a little put off by the rigor of the science curriculum we put together, but that, again, in part was a response to the industry advisory board that we put together that's helped to craft the curriculum. They really encouraged us not to skimp on the rigor. So I think, yeah, we're going to have a lot of interest in this.
Is it something that might make science a little more accessible to people that when you talk about, the rigors of science, but ultimately leading to brewing, perhaps it's something that gets someone's attention as opposed to something that may sound a little more obscure or abstract?
Yeah, I think a lot of people don't realize the important role that brewing has played throughout the centuries in the development not only of human culture, but of science, scientific equipment, scientific methodology. And I think that, yeah, that it's, in a sense, we're going back to our roots. And we're going to study the fundamental concepts of science in the context of that activity that really was where a lot of these things, these ideas and techniques were born.
How many students do you see starting in the program when it launches in the fall?
We initially indicated when we were putting this together that we thought about 20 a year would be a good amount. Frankly, a lot of people think that we were underselling it. So as we go into recruitment season, we think we'll get a much better sense of where we're at. But this has the potential to be really pretty big. All the programs on the coast have waiting lists. There's clearly high demand. And I think given the quality of the program we've put together, that once word really gets out, that there'll be plenty of students.
Gentlemen, thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Ed Martini is Associate Dean of Arts and Sciences, and Steve Burtman is a Professor of Chemistry at Western Michigan University. You can find links with more information about the Sustainable Brewing Program being launched by Western and Kalamazoo Valley Community College at wmuk.org. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.